Saving on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block, ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
When he moved to the small town, joining the volunteer fire department hadn't been part of the plan. He had taken a job with the local school district, knew almost no one outside of work, and spent most evenings alone in the little house he had rented on the edge of town. It wasn't that people were unfriendly. Quite the opposite. Everyone seemed to know everyone else, and before long he'd learned that was simply how small towns worked. Families had lived there for generations, neighbors looked after one another, and if you stayed long enough, eventually you became part of the community too. It was one of the teachers who suggested the fire department. The town depended entirely on volunteers. There were farmers, mechanics, electricians, business owners, retirees, and office workers, all carrying pagers that could go off at any hour of the day or night. Some had been responding to calls for 30 years, others had joined only recently. They all had regular jobs, regular families, and regular lives until the tones sounded. He wasn't sure he was the right person for it. He had never fought a fire, never worn turnout gear, and had no idea what to expect. But he attended an open house one evening, met a few of the volunteers, and was surprised by how ordinary they all seemed. Nobody tried to convince him, nobody gave him a speech about service or sacrifice. They simply told him what was involved, answered his questions, and invited him back if he was interested. A month later, he was. The first few weeks were overwhelming. There was equipment to learn, training classes to complete, knots to practice, hoses that seemed impossibly heavy, and more terminology than he thought anyone could possibly remember. He quickly discovered that television had done a poor job of showing what firefighting was actually like. Most of it wasn't charging into burning buildings. It was training, maintenance, inspections, medical calls, traffic accidents, and making sure every piece of equipment was ready for the next emergency. Whenever he made a mistake, someone quietly corrected him. No one did it more often than Keith. Keith had been with the department for nearly 3 decades. He wasn't the chief, and he wasn't the loudest voice in the room. In fact, he rarely raised his voice at all. He had a calm way about him that made even the newest volunteers feel like they belonged. If someone forgot a step during training, Keith was usually beside them before anyone else noticed. If a younger firefighter struggled with a piece of equipment, Keith somehow appeared without making it obvious he was helping. He never embarrassed anyone. That was probably why everyone respected him. During training nights, Keith drifted naturally toward the newer volunteers. He showed them little things that weren't written in manuals, like how to carry a hose so it wouldn't catch on every doorway, how to conserve energy during a long call, and why it was worth taking an extra few seconds to check your gear before climbing onto the truck. His advice was rarely complicated. Most of it came from experience. One habit in particular stayed with everyone. Before every call, once everyone was dressed and waiting to climb aboard the engine, Keith made one last walk down the line. Without saying much, he'd give a quick tug on a shoulder strap, adjust an air pack that wasn't sitting quite right, or tighten a loose buckle someone had overlooked while rushing to get ready. It became almost expected. If Keith gave your gear a quick tug and nodded, you knew you were ready. The first few times it happened, he thought Keith was simply checking on the new people. Eventually, he realized Keith did it to everyone, even the chief. Nobody teased him about it. Nobody told him. It wasn't necessary. It was simply one of those habits that had become part of the department long before he arrived. Over the next year, he found himself settling into the routine of volunteer firefighting. The pager interrupted dinners, family gatherings, and more than a few nights of sleep. He learned that structure fires were actually rare compared to vehicle accidents, medical calls, and automatic alarms. He also learned that some of the most important work happened back at the station after the trucks were cleaned and put away. That was when everyone sat around drinking coffee, telling stories about old calls, and giving each other a hard time about mistakes that had somehow become funnier with each passing year. He no longer felt like the new guy. Little by little, the department had become a second family. Then everything changed without warning. Keith never made it to another call. One weekend, while working around his house, he suffered a massive heart attack. By the time help arrived, there was nothing anyone could do. The news spread through town almost immediately. His funeral filled the church. Firefighters from neighboring departments lined the sidewalk outside in dress uniforms. Engines parked along the street with their lights silently flashing. People who had known Keith for decades spoke about the countless ways he had quietly helped others without ever expecting recognition. It seemed everyone had a story about him, and nearly every one of those stories ended the same way. That's just who Keith was. The station felt different afterward. His locker stayed empty for a long time. Nobody said much about it, but everyone noticed. Training nights continued, new volunteers joined, and calls still came in at every hour of the day and night, yet there was an absence that never completely disappeared. Every firefighter adjusted in their own way. Eventually, someone else occupied the locker, someone else took over training the newer volunteers, and life moved forward the way it always does. 3 years passed. He still thought about Keith from time to time, usually when he found himself showing a new volunteer one of the little tricks Keith had once taught him. Without realizing it, he had started doing some of the same things. He found himself quietly checking someone's equipment before a training exercise or offering advice without making the newer firefighters feel like they were being corrected. It wasn't something he did on purpose. It was simply the way Keith had taught him. By then, he had become one of the firefighters the younger volunteers looked up to. The calls no longer made him nervous. The routines felt familiar. And although he still missed Keith, he had long since accepted that some people leave behind habits that become part of a place long after they're gone. He never imagined one ordinary house fire would make him question everything he thought he knew. The call came just after midnight on a cold evening in late November. The tone sounded for a reported house fire on the north side of town, in one of the older neighborhoods where many of the homes had been standing for nearly a century. Within minutes, the station came alive. Turnout gear was pulled on almost by instinct. Radios crackled with updates from dispatch. Truck doors slammed, and the engines rolled into the darkness with lights reflecting off the empty streets. By the time they arrived, smoke was pushing steadily from the roof. The homeowners had already escaped safely with their two dogs, and neighbors stood across the street wrapped in blankets and heavy coats, watching firefighters stretch hose toward the front porch. Flames were still visible through a pair of front windows, but they hadn't yet spread through the entire structure. Older homes always demanded extra caution. Years of renovations often concealed weakened floors, hidden crawl spaces, and wall cavities where fire could continue burning long after it appeared to be under control. The first crew made entry while another established a water supply. He followed his lieutenant through the front door with a hose line, disappearing into thick gray smoke that swallowed the beam of his flashlight within only a few feet. Once inside, the world became remarkably small. Everything outside the narrow circle of light disappeared behind smoke, forcing everyone to rely on training, communication, and experience rather than sight. The fire itself was knocked down fairly quickly, but everyone knew that didn't mean the danger was over. Once the visible flames were out, the work slowed considerably as crews searched for hidden hotspots inside walls and ceilings, checking every room to make certain nothing had been overlooked. It was careful, deliberate work, and experienced firefighters often reminded the younger volunteers that this stage of a fire could become just as dangerous as the first few minutes if someone let their guard down. His crew spread out through the first floor while he worked his way toward the back of the house. Every step required attention. Broken plaster, soaked insulation, fallen drywall, shattered furniture, and years' worth of household belongings were scattered beneath several inches of water, making it almost impossible to tell what was underneath his boots. He swept his flashlight across the floor before every step, testing his footing the same way Keith had taught him years earlier. There was no reason to hurry. The fire wasn't going anywhere now. As he entered the hallway leading toward the bedrooms, everything seemed routine. He checked one room, then another, scanning walls and ceilings while listening for instructions over the radio. Nothing seemed unusual. The hallway was narrow, cluttered, and slick with water, but he'd worked in conditions like this many times before. Then, in the space of a single step, everything changed. His right foot landed where the floor appeared solid, but the boards beneath him suddenly shifted. His boot punched through hidden flooring concealed beneath soaked carpet and debris, twisting his leg awkwardly as his weight carried him forward. Before he could recover, his other foot slid across the wet surface, and the heavy air pack on his back continued pushing him into the fall. For the first time in years, he felt completely out of control. His flashlight bounced wildly across the hallway as he fought to catch himself, but there was nothing within reach. His trapped leg refused to come free, his balance was gone, and he immediately realized how quickly a simple fall inside a damaged structure could become something much worse. He wasn't thinking about dying. He was thinking about becoming trapped, about tying up the rest of his crew trying to get him out, about turning an ordinary house fire into a firefighter rescue. Before panic had a chance to take over, he felt someone grab the shoulder strap of his turnout coat. The hand was firm but controlled. There was no sudden yank or desperate pull, just steady pressure that stopped his forward momentum long enough for him to work his trapped boot free. Almost instinctively, he planted both feet beneath him again, caught himself against the hallway wall, and took one long breath before realizing he was standing safely once more. He turned immediately. An older firefighter was already moving away through the smoke toward the front of the house. He only caught a glimpse before the figure disappeared into the haze, but there was something instantly familiar about the way he walked, calm, unhurried, completely comfortable. For one brief moment, without giving it a second thought, he assumed it was Keith. The thought lasted only an instant. Another member of his crew called from farther down the hallway to check that he was all right, and his attention returned to the work in front of him. He answered that he was fine, stepped carefully around the damaged section of floor, and continued searching the remaining rooms as though nothing unusual had happened. By the time overhaul was complete and the last equipment had been carried outside, the incident already seemed like one of those close calls firefighters occasionally experienced and quickly moved past. Standing beside the engine while rolling hose, he found himself thinking more about how fortunate he'd been than about the person who had steadied him. Whoever it was had reacted quickly, and he made a mental note to thank them once everyone was back at the station. The familiar routine resumed as soon as they returned. Air bottles replaced, tools inspected, and turnout gear hung to dry before anyone could finally head home. Like every call, the conversation gradually shifted from serious to relaxed as everyone replayed different moments from the fire while working around the apparatus bay. It wasn't until they were nearly finished that he finally mentioned it. Looking up from the hose he was wiping down, he asked which one of them had been behind him in the hallway after he'd slipped through the floor. He laughed as he described the fall, admitting he had been certain he was about to make a fool of himself before someone grabbed his shoulder strap and got him back on his feet. The question drew a few curious looks. At first, everyone assumed they simply hadn't noticed the moment during the confusion of the fire. His lieutenant asked where it had happened, another firefighter asked which hallway he meant, and before long the crew began doing what firefighters often do after a call, reconstructing the scene from memory. One by one, everyone described where they had been. His lieutenant had already moved into the kitchen checking for extension. Another firefighter had been pulling ceiling in the living room. Someone else had gone outside to replace an air bottle, while two others had remained together searching another section of the house. The more they talked through it, the more obvious it became. No one had been close enough to catch him. He frowned, trying to picture those few seconds again. The image came back almost immediately, and he shrugged. I guess I just thought it was Keith. The words slipped out so naturally that he didn't even realize what he'd said until he looked up. For those few seconds inside the smoke, seeing Keith hadn't seemed unusual at all. It had felt completely ordinary, as though the man who had trained him years earlier was simply doing what he had always done, looking after one of the younger firefighters. The station grew noticeably quieter. No one laughed. No one suggested he'd imagined it. Instead, several of the older volunteers exchanged a brief glance before looking back at him, and he suddenly realized the conversation had taken a direction he hadn't expected. The station was unusually quiet after they returned. Everyone settled into the routine that followed every fire. Jose was washed and reloaded, air bottles were replaced, tools were wiped down and returned to their compartments, and turnout gear was hung to dry. It was familiar work that gave everyone a chance to unwind after the adrenaline of a difficult call. As they worked, he mentioned the close call in the hallway. He described slipping through the weakened floor and explained that someone had grabbed the shoulder strap of his turnout coat just before he lost his balance completely. At first, nobody thought much of it. They simply assumed another member of the crew had been close enough to steady him. As they talked through the fire, though, that explanation slowly disappeared. Firefighters have a habit of replaying calls once they're over, partly to learn from them and partly because everyone remembers different pieces of the same incident. Before long, each member of the crew had accounted for where they had been while the house was being searched. His lieutenant had already moved into the kitchen. Two firefighters had remained together in the living room. Another had gone outside to replace an air bottle while the remaining crew members had been searching a different section of the house. No matter how they reconstructed the scene, no one had been in the hallway with him. He tried explaining it away himself. Smoke could make it difficult to recognize people, and everything had happened in a matter of seconds. He suggested that he'd probably caught a glimpse of someone through the smoke, and his mind had simply filled in the rest afterward. It wasn't until he admitted that he thought he'd seen Keith that the conversation briefly stopped. No one laughed. No one suggested he'd imagined the entire thing. One of the older firefighters quietly remarked that Keith had spent nearly 30 years looking after everyone on that department. If someone needed help, Keith somehow always seemed to be the first person beside them. It was simply the kind of firefighter he had been. No one offered another explanation. Within a few minutes, the conversation drifted back to the fire itself, and before long, everyone finished their work and headed home as the first light of morning began appearing over the horizon. The drive gave him far too much time to think. He replayed those few seconds in the hallway over and over, trying to convince himself that exhaustion, smoke, and adrenaline had combined to create a memory that wasn't entirely accurate. It was certainly possible. Fire scenes were confusing places, and memory wasn't nearly as dependable as most people like to believe. Yet one detail refused to leave him. It wasn't the face. If he'd only caught a quick glimpse through the smoke, perhaps his mind really had supplied the image of the man who had trained him years earlier. What he couldn't explain was the hand. Keith had always checked everyone's turnout gear before a call with a quick tug on the shoulder strap, making sure everything was secure before they climbed onto the engine. It had become such a familiar gesture over the years that, in the middle of the fire, it hadn't seemed unusual at all. His first instinct hadn't been surprise. It had simply been the quiet reassurance that Keith had him. Looking back now, he still doesn't know what happened in that smoke-filled hallway. Maybe memory reached for the person he trusted most during the moment. He needed help. Or maybe, for one brief moment, the man who had spent decades making sure everyone else got home safely wasn't quite finished doing what came naturally to him. Whatever the truth may be, he has never experienced anything like it again. He only knows that the night he lost his footing inside that old house, someone caught him before he hit the floor. And when every firefighter who had been there accounted for where they were, there was still no one left to thank.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. the unintended consequences of these programs. They had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.